When John Kerry conceded the election of 2004, he did more than offer a gracious blessing to the assumed or apparent victor. By acquiescing in advance of the final vote tally, Kerry effectively disenfranchised all whose votes had yet to be counted. In doing so, he also discounted the sacrifices of tens of millions of voters who waited in lines at the polls, some for as long as 10 hours or more in Ohio, and the tens of thousands of activists who did the work Mr. Kerry's own party was clearly ill-equipped to do, of registering millions of new voters and getting them to the polls. In a virtual repeat of their shameful performance in the aftermath of the 2000 election, the Democratic leadership chose the path of political expediency rather than mounting an earnest challenge to what ample evidence suggests may have been widespread discrimination, fraud, and tampering and incompetence at the polls. If the truth be told, however, the time to have mounted such a challenge was immediately in the wake of Bush's coronation in January of 2001. The same Democratic Party that laughed off the Congressional Black Caucus's demands for an investigation of the Florida vote debacle also never joined the efforts to assure that all electronic voting machines be equipped to provide a voter-verifiable paper receipt. A bill that would have legislated that mandate languishes even now in a congressional committee chaired by Ohio Republican Bob Ney, and the Democrats never uttered a peep of protest. Even in California, where the Attorney General of that state, who decertified the dubious Diebold voting machines, did so under pressure from citizens' lobbies like Bev Harris's Black Box Voting. In Ohio, the Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell, who also co-chaired Bush's election committee, was forced to abandon his support for the Diebold machines under intense scrutiny brought by a nonpartisan citizens' lobby, Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections. Only a handful of brave Democratic legislators like State Senator Teresa Fedor and Franklin County Commissioner Mary Jo Kilroy lent their efforts in that battle. In Ohio and Florida and a number of other states where ex-felons are punitively denied their franchise, inaccurate purges of voters suspected of being ineligible were based on lists of names generated by unscrupulous firms with close ties to the Republican Party. Yet the Democrats complained neither about that policy nor its overtly discriminatory implementation. Ohio's provisional ballots, whose estimated number in this election ranged from as many as 400,000 in one election night report to Secretary of State Blackwell's nationally televised figure of 250,000 in the early hours of November 3rd, to a low of just over 130,000 the morning of Kerry's concession, still have yet to be counted at the time of this writing. It is incredible that the number of Ohio's provisional ballots in 2004 should be anything less than twice the just over 100,000 that were cast in the last presidential election. Provisional ballots are utilized primarily by people who have moved since they last voted or registered, and are therefore used primarily by people in lower-income brackets or unstable neighborhoods. That would include students, a majority of African Americans and Latinos, and displaced industrial workers, all categories that typically favor Democratic candidates. Kerry's concession and the Democrats' failure to call for an investigation or even an independent audit amount to a virtual slap in the face to those constituencies who were among the Kerry campaign's strongest supporters. For the legions of activists who, in their view, supported the Democratic candidate ostensibly for the same reasons many of their parents and grandparents went to war in 1945, as a desperate attempt to stem the tide of global fascism, collective disbelief has been their only solace against collective despair. Many who volunteered at their local Democratic Party headquarters and found that organization to be in a state of disarray in the early stages of the campaign discovered firsthand the organizational erosion wrought by decades of rightward centrism and preemptive bipartisan compromise. Traditional Democratic constituencies, such as African Americans, women, and organized labor, have been taken for granted for more than a generation by a Democratic leadership that has more in common with a dominant faction of the Republican Party than even with the shallow rhetoric of a succession of timid Democratic platforms. Thus, the organizational talents of those groups which the party has had to rely on have not affected the party's internal hierarchies, which have grown increasingly clueless and detached. As the complicit and uninquisitive media pundits blithely called the election for Bush, at least one predicted that the Democratic Party would now be seeing something akin to an internal civil war, wherein the progressive wing, which conducted the bulk of the campaign work, will vie with the DLC Clintonian old guard for a turn at the helm. In many ways, that process has already begun. In hundreds of local elections where Republicans were unseated or Democrats retained their seats or ran unopposed, those legislators and judges now owe their political allegiance not to the Democratic Party as a whole, but to a progressive constituency that includes organizations like Move On and Democracy for America, which are determined to remain independent of any political parties. Democratic Party Chair Terry McAuliffe is expected to step down shortly, and many independent groups who feel betrayed by John Kerry are already beginning to target the next round of elections in 2005. And since it was the newly organized and politicized grassroots activists, rather than the sluggish traditional Democratic Party machine, that mobilized the majority of new voters, a migration of that party's power base is surely an inevitable consequence. The mountain, it seems, will have to come to Muhammad after all. In the meantime, the white whale of the Democratic Old Guard, with John Kerry lashed to its side, will drift further out to sea, as the demands for vote reform and an investigation into the discrepancies of 2004 are trumpeted not by the party's leadership, but by the biggest grassroots groundswell for democracy since the civil rights movement of the 1960s. To paraphrase the words of Gil Scott Heron, who answered the pardoning of Richard Nixon by Gerald Ford for his involvement in the Watergate break-in, "We beg your pardon, John Kerry, because the concession you gave this time was not yours to give."